With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Welcome back to another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined today by my co-host Dylan Barnes. We are here. Everything is rolling. It is time to get into more of our content here with the Arizona Fall League kicking off. As you're listening to this today, it's starting. We're recording here on Monday. The Glendale Desert Dogs, which is where the White Sox prospects will be playing, start their Fall League on Tuesday. The actual Fall League itself does start today. So we've got a White Sox, prospects playing in the Fall League, which is going to be fun to watch. And then we've got a variety of other offseason, we're watching MLB playoffs right now. We're starting to think about free agency, all these types of things on the way. For now, today, we're going to focus on looking at the Fall League a little bit. James and Ian did so on the Future Sox podcast a little. So we're going to talk a little bit about kind of just the projection moving forward for a lot of the guys in the Arizona Fall League. Then we're going to do something a little fun. The White Sox have what we consider to be a pretty clear top nine in the system. And we can extend it to the top 10 as we discussed today. But there is some clear top tier of prospect in the White Sox system. But how to rank that top tier is anybody's best guess at this point. I'm in the middle of working on our Just Baseball top 15 White Sox prospects. We're going to be doing, in the offseason, Future Sox top 30. There's a really, really interesting group of prospects here. So Dylan and I are kind of just going to talk through the top 10 and just how we stack all these guys up against each other in that upper tier of prospects. So we'll get into all that after a little bit of Arizona Fall League content. But Dylan, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that the White Sox prospects that are going to the AFL are going there because, especially for guys like Hagen Smith and Braden Montgomery, those guys really have a chance to impact the 2026 White Sox. And, that's something that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But like a lot of these guys have been risers throughout the system this year, and now they're looking to show what they can do against higher level competition and hopefully carve out a name for themselves in the 2026 and beyond White Sox. And, we've seen guys like Colson Montgomery go to the Arizona Fall League and put up great numbers. But then, Colson Montgomery obviously had the rough 2023 or rough 2024 and into 2025. But a lot of these guys that are going to Arizona, they have a chance to elevate their prospect stock, not just keep it where it is right now and just get more reps, but they have a chance to elevate that stock. And again, a lot of these players were hurt this year. So Braden Montgomery and Hagen Smith, especially, those are the two guys that are probably just going there to get more reps because they probably weren't healthy for the full year. Braden Montgomery missed some time with that broken foot that he suffered at the end of the year. And then Hagen Smith was up and down and was rocky this year, but he looked to have figured some things out at the tail end of the season into the playoffs for the Barons. So it's going to be really fun to watch those two guys because, in my opinion, those are the two guys that have the best chance of potentially impacting the 2026 White Sox from the group that's going to Arizona.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be fun to see just how everybody kind of shakes out, what they look like at that level, how it looks just them facing higher level competition, right? I think that's the big step for a lot of these guys is just getting up and facing the next tier of competition. So, you look at this roster, right? Hagen Smith obviously headlines the pitchers, as you mentioned there. He's joined by Tyler Davis, Carson Jacobs, and Connor McCullough on the pitching side. And then on the offensive side, obviously you mentioned Braden Montgomery. We heard yesterday, it sounds like Braden will debut in a couple weeks. The Arizona Fall League, starting October 6th, I think it runs through November 13th, I believe, or 14th.
Yeah.
So he's got some time there. It's going to be interesting to see when he debuts. Like, is it only a week of games for Montgomery at the back end, or is it three full weeks of games, right? That's a little bit of a difference there. I mean, I think the ideal is that he debuts in a week or two, and then you get him a good three full weeks of games there in Arizona. If it's less than that, so be it. Like, any games you're getting him are going to help build up just the higher competition and put him in a good position for 2026. But curious to see how much he ends up playing ultimately. Joining Braden Montgomery is Sam Antonacci, Ryan Galini, and then Caden Connor, who was a late add to the roster with with Montgomery's kind of delayed aspect there. So you got a number of guys on that roster from the White Sox organization that are going to be pretty fun to keep an eye on there, definitely. Looking at the timeline, well, let's start on the pitching side, and then we'll go over to the hitters a little bit here, just thinking about it. If Hagen Smith puts together, let's say, 25 innings in the Arizona Fall League, that might be a little ambitious. It's probably a tad. It's probably more like 20 or so. Usually the guys in Arizona, even the starters are only going 3-4 innings typically. It's not like guys are making 5-6 inning starts for the most part in Arizona. Hagen gets 20 to 25 innings. Let's say he puts up a two and a half, three ERA. The strikeouts are good. Walks remain a bit high, but, you know, come into a reasonable point, right? What do you see as the timeline for Hagen if he does get that, you know, quality 20-25 innings of work here in Arizona?
I think that it would be pretty similar to what it was coming into this year. Like, we were all expecting him to, you know, be up in September because he was going to be that fast-moving college arm that was going to fly throughout the system. And, you know, it wasn't really that. It was a rough season. You know, you mentioned the walks. They were above 6/9, which needs to come down in order for him to be the starter that we all think he can be. So I think that it would be along that similar trajectory of maybe a post-trade deadline call-up, because I don't think that the White Sox are really going to want to burn an entire year of Hagen Smith's control on a year where maybe he's just still putting everything together. And, you know, obviously the timeline isn't what they expected for him when they drafted him. You know, they were expecting him to be up right now, or like competing for a spot to be up right now. And, you know, it just hasn't shaken out that way. So I think that I would probably have to say a September call up next year, just given how many arms the White Sox are going to be utilizing next year. And, you know, the rotation is going to be a fun battle to watch in spring training, but I don't think that Hagen Smith is going to be at the top of the pecking order in that the group of guys that could be competing for a spot in the rotation. And I don't think that they're going to want to waste an arm like him out of the bullpen, like what Grant Taylor did this year. I think they're going to try and build him up into being that ace pitcher that they drafted him as the fifth overall pick. So I think that September is still what I would say for Hagen coming into 26, but it would not shock me if, you know, he tears up AA and gets promoted in like June or July.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to look at it. I mean, I see this Arizona time as the time for him to just showcase that last two starts of the season was not a fluke, right? Like, you want to see him come in, and he doesn't need to have, you know, a 5-inning, 12-11 strikeout shutout necessarily every time he goes out in Arizona. But like, him facing the Kevin McGonagalls of the world, the Sebastian Walcutts of the world, and like having continual successful outings, right? Like, yeah, he's probably going to have one bad start in Arizona. Like, that's going to happen, right? But if he can put up, you know, if he makes 5 starts in Arizona and you see him shove in at least 3 or 4 of those, you feel pretty good about him going into next season. And you feel good about the fact that he can return to AA and do what he's meant to do there, and maybe even go to AAA, right? Like, I think, you know, the White Sox showed a willingness to put Noah Schultz in AAA, even though they've been hesitant with some prospects in the past, right? So I could see a world where both Schultz and Hagen, and maybe even Tanner McDougal as well, all start in Charlotte. You get them there together, and then it's really just whoever shines brightest first gets the first call, and then the next one, and then the next one, right? Like, they're all going to be up sometime next season, right? So I think with Hagen, you'd like to see just the command tick up a bit, right? I think that's the biggest thing I'm watching in Arizona is, like, can he just pound the zone? Like, yeah, you're facing good competition. Yeah, it's a high level, you know, the Arizona Fall League's pretty good at competition, and the stakes are a little bit higher sometimes, right? But, like, let's just see you shove. Let's see you shove, and let's see you, you know, throw strikes and attack the zone and get after hitters. And if he can put together a pretty good fall, I think it's very reasonable to think about a midseason call-up for him rather than a late-season call-up. I think you look at the deadline kind of, in my eyes, is that time where it's like, if he's pitching well, if he can make AAA stuff work, obviously the numbers aren't going to be amazing at Charlotte. Nobody's ever are. But like, if he can put up pretty good numbers at Charlotte to open the year, and come midseason, you turn over the rotation a lot to the younger, to even more of the younger guys. You move, you know, whether it's Davis Martin or Martin Perez or whoever, whatever you do to make the roster work. Like, I could see a good fall putting him in a late July call-up rather than a September call-up potentially, if it goes that way. But either way, I still think it's a good couple months to open the year in the minors still.
The thing that I agree that, like, yeah, a good fall is a building block for a potential midseason call-up. But the thing that I am looking at is how far down in the pecking order is he? Because in my opinion, I would assume that Tanner McDougal, just given the fact that he's going to be needed to be added to the 40-man this winter in the Rule 5, I would think that they would give him the ball sooner than Hagen if they both open the year in AAA. So that's kind of my thinking, and I'm not really expecting one of those three to break camp with the big leagues, because I mean, I wrestle back and forth with it, but I think that they're going to go out and sign another veteran starting pitcher, like similar to a Martin Perez this year, where
we're just keep Perez.
Yeah, that too. But it's $10 million for a 35 year old. It's a lot of money.
I hear you.
Either way, I think that they're going to be in the market for some of those older, experienced starting pitchers to sort of lean on as that crutch in the rotation. Like, all right, you're going to go out and give us six innings every fifth day, no matter if you throw shutout ball or if you give up six runs. Like, you're going to give us six, and you are going to give our bullpen a bit of a rest, and then we're going to turn it over to the younger guys. So that's kind of my thinking. I'm not sure if they would give the ball to one of those guys in the rotation to start the year. So I think that, especially with all the pitchers that are coming off of Tommy John, like a Drew Thorpe, a Kai Bush, I think that they would get cracks over Hagen to at least start the year. It would not shock me, though, if he's in that July, August, maybe September call-up mix. But I think that Hagen, as a mid-season call-up or late-season call-up, is probably what I would say from this chair right now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's a fair point. Let me ask you this, actually. I'm going to flip it on you here. If the White Sox go into spring training and they say, look, we're going to keep a rotation spot open, whichever one of these guys we think shines the brightest in spring training and looks like they're the most ready, they're going to get a rotation spot. We're leaving the five spot open. They're going to be limited in their innings. They're going to have a designated piggyback maybe, or just some relievers that can throw some bulk behind them, whatever. Which of those three, when you talk about Hagen, Noah, and Tanner, if one of those guys is given a track to a starting job, who would you say would be your pick or the one you think would get that spot?
The recency bias in me tells me Tanner McDougal. But if they're keeping a spot open and it's like, all right, whichever one of you three performs the brightest is going to win that spot out of spring training, my gut tells me that Noah Schultz would rise to the top and probably earn that shot, just given the fact that he was injured a lot of this year. And, you know, now he can take an offseason to rest up. And the fact that his stuff numbers, like Baseball America put out a really good couple of articles, just highlighting like the raw stuff of every pitcher in just like the top, I think they did 50 of each pitch type. Yeah. And Noah Schultz is up there for both fastball, slider, and changeup. So like, if that can carry over into spring training and he looks healthy and he gets that innings load built up just a little bit more, I think that they'd give it to him. But again, it comes back to the whole 40-man thing. Tanner McDougal is going to have to be on the 40-man, and he probably just had the best season of any of a White Sox starting pitcher in the organization this year. So you got to value that at least a little bit. So I would say it's between Noah or Tanner, and I think that Hagen would be the odd man out in that group, just given
it's funny, though, because you say that, and then part of my brain in the back of my head is still like, this is a guy that was the best pitcher in college baseball. He has more of that high-end experience than either Tanner or Noah do as high school picks. If he goes to Arizona, let's say he makes five starts, gives up two runs, and strikes out 35 guys in five starts. I could see Hagen walking into camp and them saying, screw it. You know, he worked through a lot of issues last year, but he figured them out. He made it work. He's thrown more innings than any of these guys have thrown from his college season, right? Dating back to his college season, Hagen Smith had more innings. Hagen Smith in 2024 logged more innings as a college pitcher than either of those guys have ever logged in their professional careers, right? So, yes, I would agree he's third in the pecking order. Could the Arizona Fall League shift him to, like, a little bit higher in that pecking order? It's possible. It's possible. Right. And that's why this Fall League is fun. And that's why the Arizona Fall League is considered this finishing school sometimes for prospects, right? Like, it is that place where you can go and say, like, hey, I'm here. And like some of those guys, like you look at a Kevin McGonigal, for people that aren't familiar, Kevin McGonigal, top two prospect in baseball, Tigers shortstop, right? Only made it to the double A level this past year. Numbers are stupid at the minor league level from the season. If Kevin McGonigal goes to Arizona and rakes and the Tigers get eliminated, whether it's the ALDS or the ALCS, while starting whoever they're going to be starting next season at shortstop, hypothetically on the current roster, right? If Kevin McGonigal goes and puts up with 1100 OPS in Arizona at the Fall League for a month, that's your starting shortstop on an opening day.
Right.
Like that has to be. At what point do you just say, hey, this guy has done it all year in the minors. He just did it against elite prospects for a month in the fall. We need a shortstop. He's our guy. Like that is what the fall league is so cool about. Like that's the best part about the Arizona fall league. And the reason why I'm really upset I'm not getting there this year, and I'm going to make it a point to get there next year, even though I'll be at spring training this year, because like it is this unique environment where you're amongst a ton of high-end prospects. You're playing at a undefined level, right? So you're not playing at like, oh, this guy's number is at double A. Here's this guy's numbers at triple A. It's its own level, right? Like it has this weird atmosphere where you've got guys from triple A that are 25 years old and experienced. You've got guys who haven't even got above high A and are at the fall league because Alfredo Duno for the Reds, like dude, just absolutely mashed in single A, and now he's gonna go face a bunch of 25-year-olds in the fall league, and he's 19 years old. Like that's insanely cool, and that's the type of place where Hagen Smith, above anybody else on this roster for the White Sox, right? That's the one guy I think you can look at and say he can legitimately completely change his trajectory next season if he just shoved in the fall league, right? I'm not saying he makes opening day roster. I'm just making the case that he could give himself a much stronger case heading into the spring this year if he shoves in the fall league, right?
Yeah, the thing that I love the whole Kevin McGonigal comparison because, again, the Tigers are, I think, who's our starting shortstop last night?
Was it McKinstry or was it Javi? I think they might be starting Javi. I think they're either starting Javi in short, and
it was Javi.
They have Meadows back in center.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the thing with Hagen and Kevin McGonigal is like McGonigal did it all year. Like there was no bumps in the road for McGonigal.
Right. Exactly.
For Hagen,
yes.
For sure. Hagen there was. So let's say he does shove in the fall league. How much do you value the last seven-ish starts from Hagen? And the 15 or so that he was looking yep. rough. So yep. It's going to be tough. I think that it's going to come down to how well that each pitcher does in spring training, which again, the starting pitching rotation spots are going to be up for grabs. So it's going to be fun to watch in spring training, but I agree. If Hagen can come out and look like the highest paid left-handed pitcher in the history of the MLB draft, like he was, I think that he's going to, again, boost his stock to be, like sort of neck and neck with Tanner and Noah for that rotation spot if it comes down to that.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you there. Looking at some of the other pitchers real quick, Tyler Davis, Carson Jacobs, Connor McCullough, more organizational guys. I think we like some of the stuff there from some of these guys, like not to say we don't like the stuff there. I don't think any of these guys are like knocking on big leagues at all, though. I think that's the interesting thing here is I don't think any of them are in a position to like earn a big league spot anytime in 2026. If not, like definitely not out of the gate. None of them have been above double A. Carson Jacobs has only been to high A. McCullough was just coming off surgery too. So like he just threw a handful of games at the end of the season, right? I think Jacobs is the one I'm circling the most of a guy who I think could elevate his stock. I think you could see it. And Tyler Davis as well, honestly. We got some really good reviews from within the organization on Tyler Davis. So those are two pure relief prospects. McCullough still being used as a starter, as a swingman kind of, right? But Davis and Jacobs, like, these are two older, experienced relievers. Tyler Davis is going on 20. I think he's 26, 27. I think he's 27. Carson Jacobs is a guy who was undrafted and then signed with the White Sox last season or 2 years ago. And is 24 now. So these are two older relief pitching prospects, right? But what you want to see in Arizona from these guys is just like go shove, like throw out of the bullpen seven times against high level prospects and go shove. Like that's really what it comes down to. It's just like, can you go out there and just abs? I got to fly all over you. You see this in the YouTube? People in the YouTube are watching me just get attacked by this bug right now. But Jacobs and Davis, like, it just like you want to just see him shove, like go shove and show that you are more than a relief name to watch, right? Show that you're at least a relief prospect and you should be on that radar, right? Both guys with really good stuff, honestly. And I do think you could see a tick up here. They're just guys right now. You look at the trajectory, right? Like, I think it's more of like, oh, can you become a 2027 reliever, right? Like, it's not really as much of like Hagen's situation. It's more of like a show that your stuff can play against high level talent and put yourself in a position to compete for a relief spot come 27, probably.
Yeah, I think that those three guys they've risen the ranks in the yeah. like the relief pitcher depth chart year, but I don't think that they're near the top of the pecking order where
it's a lot of relievers too.
There's a whole bunch of relievers and a whole bunch that are doing it in double A or higher that would get spots over them. But is Gerald Rosado in the fall league?
I know that he's on the roster and he's not, it's a little weird. He's not listed. That's a good question. So yes, tentatively, but it doesn't look like he has an assignment necessarily. It's a bit weird. I think he is on the roster, but I'm a little confused because it marks him. It marks him differently. So maybe I think it's just maybe a delay because because of the replacement. But if Geraldo Sato does play, I think that's another one who is at least worth keeping an eye on here.
Yeah.
Just because he was that trade piece from the Paul DeJong trade in 2024 over from the Royals. So he's got up to Double A this season. Didn't have a great year, but was really good in High A before struggling in Double A. So that's that jump that often can get guys. So another reliever just to have an eye on there. For Arizona.
Yeah, there's a lot of like we've said, a lot of relief pitchers in the system right now. And Rosado was an interesting one coming over from the Royals. And I think we were both kind of like, all right, well, we'll keep an eye on him, but we're not going to have super crazy high expectations for him, like just right off the gate. And like for the other three relievers that we've mentioned today, just doing it against higher level competition and just going out, throwing your best pitches and doing it against some pretty good hitting prospects Kevin McGonigal, Sebastian Walcott, Alfredo Duno. Like, those guys are really good, and they're tough to get out.
Yeah, 100%. Flipping over to the hitting side, we'll hold off on Braden Montgomery for a little just because we don't know how much he's going to play. I don't know how much, if he does play, he's going to have that much of an impact on his daily like ability to just change his status. But what we should talk about and what I want to start with is Sam Antonacci, and a guy that you've heard us, if you listen to the show regularly, you hear us talk about all the time.
Every episode.
We somehow get Antonacci into pretty much every episode just because the profile is so fun. The question with Antonacci is like, is the fall league going to give him a case to break camp? I don't think so, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, I think that if anything can give Sam Antonacci like the edge up over a Chase Meidroth, a Brooks Baldwin, if Lenin Sosa gets traded, like can he win that additional infield spot? I think it's going to come down to spring training. Like that's just how neck and neck it's going to be. But if he bats 400 in the fall league, like something ridiculous like that, like you have to give him a shot, right? Like he just posted a 440 on base percentage. Was it 440? It was something crazy. It was over 400. I know that. But like Sam Antonacci just has done everything that he was meant to do since joining the White Sox. And if he continues to do it in the fall, I see no reason why he shouldn't be one of the guys that's battling for a spot out of spring training. But again, I think that they're going to give the nod to some older experienced guys right away, and then we'll see Antonacci later on in the season. Did you get it?
Dude, no. I'm sorry for everyone on YouTube that's watching me just get attacked by this bug this entire recording, but yes, I'm with you there. I think you're completely you're on spot there with Antonacci. I don't think he's competing for a big league spot quite yet, but what I do think this fall league can show is like, don't send him back to Birmingham. I think that's the biggest thing this fall. I think that this fall league, like he played 50 games in Birmingham. He continued to be very good. Like if he goes to Arizona and he even, as long as he doesn't get overmatched, which Antonacci's not the player that's going to get overmatched in Arizona. Like if he puts up pretty good numbers in the fall league, I think that's the final seal of just like, he can go straight to Charlotte next year. And then you put him in big league positioning, right? Like, I don't think he realistically is competing for a big league spot here, but I do think the fall league can like completely solidify that he goes to AAA. And then from there in AAA, it's only a matter of time that we'll see him in the big leagues at some point next season. Because once a guy like that gets to Charlotte, you figure he's going to do pretty well there. And then from there, like he'll get a chance at the big league level. So I do think the fall more than anything is just his way to cap off an excellent season and just say, hey, like Double A's below me. Like I'm going to, he's going to be in Charlotte next year. So that's probably the more clear like target here for Antonacci rather than an opening day spot.
Yeah. I think that Birmingham, he posted I forget what the exact number was, but it was like, let me look. Yeah, it was a 152 WRC plus with a 435 on base across 49 games in Double A. Yeah. And for a 22-year-old in his first full professional season to do that while striking out under 15% of the time and walking at a nearly 13% clip, like he doesn't need to go back. Like you've seen enough from Sam Antonacci in Birmingham already that I would be more than comfortable promoting him to AAA. But if he goes out and again hits 350, 400 in the fall, there's not even a question in the organization's mind is, chip him up to AAA, watch him post like a 450 on base percentage and probably see the power tick up too, given the offensive environment in Charlotte. Yep. So that would be really fun.
100%, man. Last two guys to mention here, Ryan Gallany and Caden Connor, kind of get paired together here a little bit different players as they are, but, you know, both late round draft picks from that class in 2023. Two guys that we, you know, have been watching for some time and just kind of saying, hey, like, these guys are org guys, right? And they're kind of the description of older college draft picks, right? College bats, right? But these guys just keep moving up the ranks. I mean, you saw Caden Connor maybe get a couple games. Caden Connor plugged in a couple times in AAA, but primarily they were both in Birmingham and AA this season for the most of the year after starting in high A. Gallany at least started in high A. But, you know, I think it's a similar situation, Antonacci. I don't think these guys are big league pieces yet. I don't think they're going to be pushing for big league spots. But, like, would you be upset if both these guys just started in Charlotte next year? Like, I'm cool with that. I don't see why not at this point. Like, I think Gallany's done enough. I think Connor, the offensive production was a little bit lower. But Gallany, this is more of just a he missed some games. Get him a handful more at bats, I think. You know, he still played 119 games, actually. He really only missed a couple weeks. But missing a couple weeks there and playing well, I think it's just like, oh, let's see the discipline. Let's see the power. Let's see it against higher-level competition. And then with Caden Connor, I think it's another just aspect of, like, get him some more positional versatility. This is a guy who's played all over the field. Part of his value kind of lies in his ability to play infield and outfield both in each corners, right? So I think for him, he played a lot of games this year. He doesn't really need the games necessarily, but I do think you want to see him at the higher level, just get some good at bats, get some, you know, get some more experience. And I also just think these two are just are in the same bucket of, like, if they have a good fall, like, there's no hesitation at all for them to start in Charlotte, rather than maybe there shouldn't be already probably, but compared to, like, a little hesitation, maybe now there's none. So I would like to see these guys have a good fall, but I think all three of those guys, Antonacci, Gallany, and Connor are set up really well to, you know, debut and to start the season in Charlotte.
Yeah. A little tidbit on Gallany. I didn't realize his strikeout number was
really low.
15.4% in Birmingham across 98 games. And for a player of his archetype, you know, that big hulking first baseman who's going to hit for a bunch of power, a 15.4 strikeout rate in perhaps the toughest pitching league in the entire minor leagues, 15.4% strikeout rate, you will absolutely live with that. And you can very easily envision him starting off in Charlotte, and then maybe he absolutely rakes. He does the Tim Elko route where he just rakes in Charlotte and the organization has no choice but to give him a shot. I mean, it'll be his age 26 season next year, and he's coming off of a season where it was a 118 WRC plus in 120 games, and he only hit 11 homers. But again, it was in Birmingham. It's very tough to hit homers at Regions. It's one of the deadest ballparks in the entire minor leagues again. And to hit seven homers, I think he might have led the Barons in homers with only seven. But regardless, I'm keeping an eye on those two as, like, guys who could maybe be a big league piece in a pinch. But I'm not expecting them to be, you know, everyday regulars where, you know, they're going to go out and play 160 games. Yeah. But if either of them can make the big leagues, I think they could be a fun piece for fans to watch.
And from an organizational perspective, like, you're, I think, what is it, 12th and 17th rounders being college picks that then make the big leagues at all, or even giving it to Charlotte at all, but make the big leagues even as a bench piece, right? Like, awesome, right? That's great. Like, from the organization, from that side of things, like, that's a victory in itself that these guys are in the Arizona Fall League, that they're competing well, that they're going to have a chance to be even a big league bench bat at some point, right? Like, that's a dub. That's the Arizona Fall League preview. Make sure you're keeping up with Future Sox. You know, I know our guy Ian's going to be putting out highlights from the Arizona Fall League on the Future Sox page. Myself, we'll be talking about prospects on the page. I know Dylan will be as well. We'll both be keeping up with this stuff. So if you want to stay updated on all these prospects playing in Arizona over the next month and a half, we will have plenty of content. You need to be talking about it on the show as well as this stuff goes on. But for now, let's talk a little top 10, man. Let's talk a little White Sox prospect rankings.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding Ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And I, like I said earlier, I'm working on the JB updated rankings right now. We're updating every single team prospect list. So if you're interested in other teams too, we've got every single team top 15 for Just Baseball coming out over the next month or two. But I'm working on the White Sox one right now. And like, I don't know, man. Like we've talked about this before. There's a pretty clear top nine prospects. When you look at the White Sox organization, you've got seven holdover players. You know, this is graduating Teal, Caro, Colson Montgomery, et cetera, right? These guys are all graduated now. So all the guys on the list are guys that have not debuted in terms of the guys still on the prospect list, right? There's a really clear top nine in our eyes right now. When you look at that top nine, it's seven holdovers. It's two of the recent draft picks being the top two draft picks from this draft class in 2025. The list, the names are correct, are there. The order, I have no clue. So we'll start it in chunks, right? You've got nine guys. We'll start at the top three and then we'll work our way down to the four through nine because the four through nine is super jumbled. But I think there's a pretty consensus top three in our eyes of who the top three are. How we order them, I have no clue. The way that the three people that we kind of have at the top of our list, and this is not necessarily industry consensus. It's a different top three for Pipeline, I believe. It might be a different top three on Baseball America even. But I know that for us and for people that follow the White Sox closely, I think most people would agree that there is three players that are the top three guys: Noah Schultz, Caleb Bonnemer, and Brandon Montgomery. Those are the three prospects we have as our clear top three at this point. How you order those, I don't know, man. I really don't know. Noah Schultz has been the White Sox number one guy for about a year and a half now, I think, since 2024. He had taken over Colson midseason 2024 and it has kind of been number one since then. Brandon Montgomery, I think, was probably considered the number two earlier in the year. Actually, I think it might have been, most people might have said Hagen Smith was the number two actually going into the season. He struggles a bit. I think since about midseason, Brandon Montgomery's been the number two in most places. Then you got Caleb Bonnemer, who earlier in the year was as low as like a 7 or 8 on the lotto list, climbed his way up this season, obviously. But I am not necessarily ruling out Caleb Bonnemer being the number one prospect in the system, man. Honestly, the more that I look at it and the more I think about it, he has done enough to justify putting him in the top, for sure in the top three. I don't think it's even close. He's in the top three. There is a case to be made Caleb Bonnemer could jump both these guys and be considered the number one prospect in the system because you've got a 19-year-old shortstop in his first professional season. Like, if he was drafted where – I'm not saying he's Connor Griffin, not at all. If he was drafted in the first round where the White Sox, you know, had drafted Hagen Smith, right? Like, let's say that pick was Caleb Bonnemer for whatever crazy reason, right? Like, that pick was Caleb Bonnemer, he'd be a top 30 prospect in baseball without a question. If he was a first round pick, if he was even a late first round, let's say he was even the 20th overall pick, right? If Caleb Bonnemer was a first round pick at all and had done what he just did in his age 19 season at shortstop, he'd be a top 30 prospect in baseball. And he was drafted in the second round. It's not like this is like some ninth rounder who broke out, right? Like, this is a second round pick who was given late first round money in terms of signing bonus. His signing bonus was equivalent to like the 25th overall pick. So he was basically a first round pick in that regard. And just put up a 19-year-old season where he absolutely dominated the lower levels of minor league baseball while showing that he can play shortstop at a pretty high level. I don't think it's crazy to say Bonnemer has a case to be made for the top prospect in the system right now.
And you want to know what's even crazier is I have him number one.
Do you really?
I did. I put him number one. So I agree with you. I think that those are the top three guys. I was wrestling with it as I was making my list. I was like, am I really going to knock Noah Schultz for having the knee issue all year? And am I going to drop my guy Brandon Montgomery down a peg to number two or number three? But then you just look at what Caleb Bonnemer did in, like you said, his age 19 season. Didn't look overmatched in basically any game. Like, there was a rough period in June where, you know, that entire Kannapolis locker room got sick for about 2 weeks, like right before the All-Star break. And I mean, that was his worst month. I mean, outside of that month, it was 800 plus OPS and a handful of homers each month. And to do that in your age 19 season and just not have basically any adjustment period, like you said, if he was drafted with the fifth overall pick, if Hagen Smith and he were flipped, I think he's a top 30 prospect in baseball. And I don't really think it would be close. But I was wrestling with it a lot, and I think – as it stands right now, Caleb Bonnemer is my pick for number one overall prospect in the system.
See, what's crazy is I just made that whole point off the top of the segment, and I don't have Caleb Bonnemer at number one. And that's why this is such a fun, argument and such a fun situation, because there's no wrong answer, right? Like the White Sox are hoping that these three guys are three huge pieces of the future. Like, you've invested a lot in the development of Noah Schultz, in the draft pick of Caleb Bonnemer, and having Brady Montgomery be the centerpiece of that trade for Garrett Crochet, right? Like, you traded a top five pitcher in baseball, and Brady Montgomery, top three, to the case to be made. Different conversation for another day. But, you know, Braden Montgomery, as much as Kyle Teal we think is going to be a very good big leaguer, Braden was still the headline of that trade, per se, right, in our eyes and in a lot of people's eyes, right? I still gave Noah Schultz a slight edge at the one spot. Yeah. And the reason I did that is because it sounds like Noah Schultz didn't really have his full health under him the last few months of the season. That messed with him a lot. There was a lot of changes in his pitch arsenal. I'm willing keep my flag in the 6'9 left-hander who can throw 100 and has the stuff Noah Schultz has, even if it means it's going to be a little riskier, it's going to be a little tricky to figure out how it's going to work. They're right there. I can't take him off that spot just yet. 2 months into 2025, I totally might. Right now, I can't do it just yet. So I went Schultz, Bonnemer, Montgomery. All three of them are incredible. You could flip it. You could make a case for any of them. And I just made a case for Bonnemer, right? And you can make a case for Brady Montgomery. You can make a case for Brady Montgomery in terms of power upside. If he sticks in center field, if you don't expect him to, but if he does, right? Like, you've got a guy who could be a 40 home run outfielder and you know, switch hitting, right? Like, he's totally negated a lot of the platoon concerns this year. He actually hit almost better from the right side sometimes this season, right? So you can make a case for that guy because that's a 40 homer upside guy in the outfield, right? And so Sox need a key outfielder for the future, right? Like, you can make a case for any of these three guys. I went Schultz, Bonnemer, Montgomery for now. Could easily change my mind in like a month from now. I could easily change my mind, but I'm still writing this JB list, honestly. Like, I definitely could. But that puts it into perspective how much we see these three highly and how close they are really at this point.
Yeah, I went Bonnemer, Schultz, Montgomery. So we just flipped the top two.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was close for me. I could easily see any of these three guys being the number one prospect on someone's list. And I think that I can really envision all of them being – Like we've said earlier, top 30 prospects in all of baseball, because, I mean, Braden Montgomery was hurt all year, or not all year, but he was coming off of an injury. He was battling through an injury at the end of the year. And, you know, he really looked good. Like, there were, like you mentioned, cut out basically all of the platoon concerns with him. And again, Noah Schultz was dealing with the knee issue for the greater portion of the season. And then Caleb Bonnemer is Caleb Bonnemer. Like, he did not look phased for a second at all this year. So I think any of those three guys are very, very good number one overall prospect if you have them. But then this is where it gets tricky, because then the 4 through 9 is up in the air. You could have basically anybody from 4 through 9 and you can make a case for it.
Yeah, I think the 4 is pretty clear for me. And I do think there's a case to be made for 5 and 6 having a chance to be the 4th. I think 4th is Hagen Smith, and I think it's pretty comfortable there just because there are some guys behind him that might have a higher 4, right? If Hagen Smith ends up being a closer or reliever, like, yeah, you'd rather have 5, 6, 7 probably than Hagen Smith. But Hagen Smith's upside as a starter, what we saw at the end of the year, it's just too high for me to drop him anywhere below 4 just because we know there is – 2 starter in there if everything clicked perfectly for Hagen Smith, right? Like, so that's what makes me, like, he's too risky for me to put above the hitters in Bonnemer and Montgomery, but he's too much upside to put below the guys that I have at 6, 7, 8, 9, right? So I do think there's this 4 through 9, like, it's the same tier, but I still think Hagen Smith is almost in a tier of his own where he's a tick below those top 3 because of what we saw this year in terms of, like, command issues, but he still is a notch above the 5 through 9 because of the upside that we know he has.
Yeah, I had that exact thing in my mind. Like, you know, you got the 3 guys and then you got the 4, like, is kind of up in the air. And I have Hagen Smith at 4. And then 5 through 9 is like the next, like, slightly tier down from Hagen. But I think that, again, the 4 through 6, the 4 through 7 range is where I struggle the most to rank these guys, just because I could see people can make cases for the guy who I have. 5 through 7, you can make a case for all of them being 4 because just how either A, how highly they were drafted, or B, the season that they just had. Like, I'm not going to discredit anybody who has, let's say, Christian Opper 4. Like, he was absurdly good this year. So if they want to bump him up to four, by all means, I'm here for it. And, you know, by mid-season 2026, he could be four. Like, I'm not sure, but I still believe in Hagan Smith's upside. And, you know, the final two starts of the year definitely solidified my feeling of like, yeah, he's going to get back on track and he's going to be the pitcher that he was drafted to be. So I think Hagan Smith four is pretty clear in my eyes. But then again, five through seven, I struggled ranking these guys. Just I think that there's three guys here that are pretty clearly the next like step down below Hagan. But I mean, again, you could have any of these three guys in any order.
So you say clear, and I think we think clear, right? But one of the guys you mentioned earlier in this episode, in Sam Antonacci, is going to be in the Arizona Fall League. This is no disrespect to anyone, but like he's listed as the 11th White Sox prospect on MLB Pipeline. And then he's listed as the 25th White Sox prospect on Baseball America. And then he's listed as – I'm not even seeing him listed on Fangraphs. So – he's in there somewhere, I think. But yeah, Sam Antonacci is listed at. Yeah, I don't even think he's listed on Fangraphs at this moment for White Sox. This was earlier in the season, so that could be whatever. But either way, nobody having him as a top 10 prospect is crazy to me. And I think we believe when we look at this 5-9 range, he's very much in that 5-9 range. And for me, he's towards the first half of that 5-9 range. I think Billy Carlson slots in at five. And that's where he slid in for me. And that's where I think he fits best, because I do think Hagan, you've got that more upside to dream on. And I do think Hagan gets the nod there, half a tick above him. But I think with Carlson, like, you know, you're getting an elite shortstop defensively. It's so much projection. He has the first round pedigree. You see the excitement around him, the power upside. Yeah, there's going to be some swing adjustments. There's going to be some feel to hit that he's going to have to figure out as he develops here. But at the very least, you have an athletic, elite 70 grade fielder at shortstop with, you know, athleticism, high run times, and you're going to see what you can juice out of the bat offensively. I think the floor is so high for him that it has to be five in comparison to a Sam Antonacci, right? Who for me, like, I have Sam Antonacci sixth, I'll spoil it. But for me, Billy Carlson has the slight edge over Antonacci. When I started to look at the data, I almost wanted to go Antonacci, and then I've started to dive into things the past week or two, and I went with Carlson at five, Antonacci at six, just because Carlson, you know, you're getting an elite shortstop, and the bat still has a lot more potential upside than Antonacci. Antonacci's floor as a hitter is extremely higher. You know, Antonacci is going to be at least big league capable as a hitter. Billy Carlson might never hit enough to get to the big leagues, but more upside offensively paired with a guaranteed elite shortstop is where I go five Carlson, six Antonacci personally.
That's exactly my reasoning for both. I have the exact same. I have Carlson five, Antonacci six, and then seven is I could see either of the two breakout pitchers this year. And
yeah,
who did you go with at seven?
I went McDougal. I just think Tanner McDougal's he's a step ahead of Christian Hopper, yeah, I think. And that's where I went McDougal seven, Christian Hopper eight, and we'll just spoil it because we're already getting there. Jaden Fowski is nine for me. And I think we have the same thing here. So it's interesting. We ended up, other than the top two, we have everything else the same, which is, you know, we're in line here. But we're, for me, like, we'll start with breaking down, like, the Carlson Antonacci pair at 5-6, I think is logical because they're just in that, like I explained, you know, it's Carlson has more upside there, but you know Antonacci's a big league player. That's where I go with 5-6. The reason I keep Antonacci over either of these pitchers who were extremely good this year in McDougal and Christian Hopper, right, is because I know Antonacci is going to be a big league piece at one level, and he's going to hit enough to be a big league piece. I think McDougal and Hopper will both be as well, but there is still a degree of reliever risk there, right? If Tanner McDougal or Christian Hopper end up in the bullpen, they're instantly a less valuable piece than Sam Antonacci, even if Sam Antonacci is a second baseman who doesn't have a ton of power. Like, he's a big league hitter, and he's going to hit enough to stay at the big league level, right? So that's where I go. Antonacci six, and then McDougal seven, Hopper eight. My only reasoning for McDougal over Hopper is just he's just a little further ahead in his progression, right? We saw it in Double A, we saw Hopper in High A, right? And McDougal just did a little bit more this season to give us further confidence in him. He's just a little bit more of a developed product than Hopper, but both these guys are neck and neck as the next pitchers in the tier behind Schultz and Smith for me.
Yeah, I think that, again, hits the nail on the head. You know, outside of Bonomer and Schultz at 1-2, we had the exact same 1-9. But yeah, I have McDougal over Opper. Just I think that there's a bit more like pitchability with McDougal, if that makes any sense. Yeah. I think that the four pitch arsenal that he has, the command was, it took multiple steps forward this year. And I it's the same thing with Opper. Like, yeah, he's probably a year behind where McDougal is right now. And, you know, if Christian Opper goes out and does exactly what Tanner McDougal right. did this year, like, awesome. That is fantastic. And it would not shock me if Christian Opper ended up being better than Tanner McDougal, just because of the raw stuff and just how high his ceiling is. But I went McDougal 7 just because the stuff that saying Christian Opper's stuff is better than yours is not a knock on Tanner McDougal's stuff. Like, Tanner McDougal has very good stuff. It's a fastball that can run up to 100-101. Yep. And then it's two great breaking balls and a changeup that's in the bag, and it's been developing really well this year.
Yep.
So I think that long term, I would say Tanner McDougal has a higher chance of being in the rotation than Opper, just given I think his command sticks better than Opper's. And that's, again, not to say that Opper doesn't have great command, but I think that if one of them goes to a bullpen role, it'll be Opper. But again, I think that both of these guys have... They're pretty clearly the third and fourth best pitchers in the organization right now, or in the farm system right now. And the sky is the limit for them going into 2026 and beyond, because both of these guys are really fun to watch. I loved watching each and every one of their starts this year.
Yep, 100%. I'm with you there. Would it shock you if the White Sox had 8 top 100 prospects at some point in 2026? Is that crazy? Like, am I being a little too ambitious? I don't know if it lines up. I think there's a good chance by the time someone graduates, right? Yeah. Like, I think that probably one of Schultz, Smith, Brayden Montgomery graduates before that happens.
But
I don't know, man.
Let's count. Schultz,
we just talked about it, right? Like, Schultz, Bonham, Brayden, Montgomery. Yep. Hagen, Smith is already, yep.
Billy Carlson.
Yep.
McDougal, Opper, maybe?
I don't think Antonacci's – I don't think it's crazy to say Antonacci could be. I mean, I don't think the impact is there for him to be there right now, maybe. But, like, I think there's 8 guys that are – those 8 guys I think are at least top 200, right? And I think you're looking at those guys for sure. Cool. I think there's a universe where all 8, even if it's not the same time, I think all 8 of those guys can be top 100 prospects in 2026 at some point. I don't think that's
dare
crazy.
Dare I say even
Jaden Fowski?
Yes.
Jaden Fowski?
Jaden Fowski, like, I am higher on him, like, right now than I was at Caleb Bonmer, for Caleb Bonmer at this time next year. So, or this time last year. So, like,
which is fair.
I really like Jaden Fowski's overall makeup. And if he has a season similar to what Caleb Bonmer just did,
for sure.
Would not shock me in the slightest. And I think that he could very well be that 8th guy in the top 100. And, you know, you're probably getting a top 3 at the worst draft pick. So that's another guy to add to that list. And then, like, is it back to the 2019 days where you've got 10 top 100 prospects? Like, you've got...
And this is us being a little ambitious, for sure. Yeah. Rand, don't get too excited as you're listening to this. But the point is, like, the system still needs some depth. There's still some areas of weakness, for sure. But you've got a really strong 9 guys leading this farm system right now. I really do believe that. And I think that the general public probably isn't as keyed in on Tanner McDougal and Christian Opper and even the draft picks, right, as we are. And definitely not as much as Sam Antonacci. But I think there is a really, really strong group of 9 here, and that's why it's so hard to order them. So ultimately, Dylan and I had, you know, Schultz and Bonnemer 1 and 2. We had it flipped. I had Schultz 1, Bonnemer 2. Dylan had the opposite. After that, we had the exact same. Brayden Montgomery 3, Hagen Smith 4, Billy Carlson 5, Sam Antonacci 6, Tanner McDougal 7, Christian Opper 8, and Jaden Fowski 9. It's a really fun group. It's hard to rank. That's why I wanted to talk about it today. I hope everybody enjoyed just hearing all of our thoughts on it, because it's really hard. It's hard to stack these guys up, and it's a really good group of 9. Just for fun here at the end, who's your 10 right now? Because I think there's about 5 guys you can make a case for at 10, and I'm not sure who I'm putting on the JB list at 10, because we do top 15. So luckily I have some room to work with there, where all the guys I think could be 10 will make the top 15 here for me. But I'm really not sure. I ended up just between 2 guys when I looked at it, but it could be a number of guys you could think of here.
I went Haral Perez. I don't know if he was one of your 2 guys.
Yeah, he's one of my 2. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went Haral Perez. The other guy that I could very easily see at that 10 spot, I have him at 11, is Mason Adams.
Yeah, that's exactly my one, and then my 10 and 11 as well. Yeah.
So like, those 2 guys are pretty clearly I don't want to say pretty clearly, because there's a couple guys that could be in the mix there. But I think that what Haral Perez did this year as a 20-year-old in high A to hit 22 homers it's really impressive. And I don't think he's getting enough love from like White Sox fans and the national media, because what he's doing as like the pull side power that he has and how frequently he gets into it, it's really impressive to watch from a guy that you wouldn't expect to hit 22 homers as a 20-year-old. He's maybe 5'10", and he's hitting moonshots. Like, they're not going 470 feet like Colson Montgomery, but like they're going pretty well over the fence. Like, he doesn't hit many cheap homers. Like, when he gets one, it goes far. And I think that Mason Adams, you know, he lost this season due to Tommy John, but like what he did in 2024 was really special. And it was basically a quality start every fifth day for Mason Adams. And it was really fun to see. And I'm bummed that we didn't get to see him pitch in the big leagues this year, because in my eyes, he absolutely would have gotten a shot. If not right out of the gate, he would have gotten one later on in the year. So I think both of those two are, I think both of them are in lockstep for that 10 spot.
Yep, I'm with you. That's exactly who I had there. I think if you want to make the upside case, you could make a case for like a George Walkout just because of the upside. Yeah. I think if Mason Adams didn't get hurt, he would have been more comfortably in that 10, right? Yeah. I think I'd have a better case. But because of the injury, it's hard. You see Jorge Perez put up big numbers. But yeah, that's who I had at my 10 and 11 as well. So just an idea there of where we stand with all the prospects heading into the season. We're going to have so much more. Any final thoughts here as we wrap today, Dylan? And we'll get a lot of more stuff out. But excited for the Arizona Fall League, man. I can't wait. I'm excited to watch these guys go to work for sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be really fun. And I'll leave by saying one thing. If we go into 2026 with a guy that you would bet money on rising into the top 10, like, who would that be? Let's say somebody that's not even in your top 15. Who would that be?
That's a good question, man.
Maybe mid-season 2026, who would rise to that top 10 spot? You're
pushing my brain a little here. Part of me wants to go Landon Hodge, a fourth round pick this year, just because a high school guy who I think is a step behind both Jaden Fowski and Billy Carlson. But still, if he comes out and has a strong showing at the complex and gets to Kannapolis next season, right? Like, if he gets to Kannapolis and shows any sort of success in Kannapolis in his first pro season, given his profile, I think that's a guy who I could easily see pushing towards top, 12, top 10, top 15. I think that's definitely one just based on age and what we've seen from him. Blake Larson, another sneaky one to keep an eye on. I think you were going there. You were going there. I'm sorry for taking it, but that's the other guy who we forget. Blake Larson was a comp B pick, right? So basically the money of a second rounder last season, underwent Tommy John in February. So should be starting to throw off a mound in the spring, probably gets back into game action around May or so this season, which puts him in a spot where, like, even if he stays at the complex for a bit, if we could definitely see Blake Larson like debut in Kannapolis mid next season and start to show the high octane stuff that he had coming out of the draft. So a high school pick who, like, we kind of, have forgotten about because he hasn't thrown for the organization yet in a year and a half since being drafted. If he debuts in Kannapolis this year, he could be one of those guys that might not have enough time to rise quite the way Opera did this season, but he could easily be a, back of the top 30, jumps immediately into the top 15 type of guy if he debuts and looks good out the gate next year.
Yeah, I think those two guys are the two guys that are on my radar as well, especially Larson, because again, you mentioned the high octane stuff. Like, what he showed in high school was, I don't want to say Noah Schultz-esque, but like, it was very, very big good time. Stuff from the lefty, from the left-handed side. It's a power breaking ball, fastball up 98. And again, it sucks that we lost him this year, but if he can come back showing that same stuff, I think that he is going to be the breakout pitcher of 2026 if he gets enough innings above the complex league. So that's where I stand on that.
Yep, I'm with you, man. Last thing before we wrap, World Series prediction. We're in the DS right now. Who you got? Who beat two in the World Series?
So coming into the playoffs, I said Dodgers over Red Sox. That obviously can't happen anymore. It's really tough because the team who I want to pick out of the AL, the Mariners, they got to beat Skubal again. And I think that if they can, but they're going to Detroit. They're facing Flaherty and Mize. I think I got to go Dodgers over Mariners now. The Blue Jays look unreal through the first two games, but I think I got to stick with the Dodgers and the NL, and then I can't pick against my Mariners in the AL. They're such a fun team.
Totally fair. I think the Blue Jays look awesome, dude. I'm enjoying the heck out of watching them beat up on the Yankees. It's making me really happy. So I also went Dodgers out of the gate. I wish I could go someone else in the NL. I can't do it. I almost want to go Blue Jays over Dodgers, but I'm going Dodgers over Blue Jays, unfortunately. I wish I wasn't. Blue Jays rotation.
rotation outside of you, Savage. It's,
I don't know, dude. I could see Bieber and Gosman both shoving. Bieber looks good, man. We'll see how Bieber looks tomorrow. That'll be an interesting thing to see Bieber's first playoff start. If Barrios comes back, maybe. I know he's not healthy, but if he just decides to rubber arm it for two games and shoves for a game or two, maybe. I go Dodgers over Blue Jays, but I would love to see the Blue Jays pull it out. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Well, we will talk to you next time on the Roundup. Thanks, Dylan. We'll talk to you guys next time.